Last week, I would say that we sort of went through chapter 16. We sort of, why I say, because I'm not pleased. There are certain threads that we have not completed in chapter 16. But 2 weeks ago, yes, 2 weeks ago. But there are threads that we're going to have to pick up. Chapter 16 was about Ahaz, king of Yehuda. I'll just remind you quickly. It was about Ahaz, king of Yehuda. Ahaz's father was Yotam, who was a great tzaddik. His son is going to be Chizkiyahu, who will be one of the great tzaddikim of Malchei Yehuda, the kings of Yehuda. In the middle, Ahaz was a terrible, terrible Rasha. And the Gemara is going to talk about this. And we'll talk more about Ahaz when we come to Chizkiyahu. We're going to have to understand it because he did terrible things. Very, very difficult to understand Ahaz. So I say, I still owe you on chapter 16. Chapter 17, I have to go through today because it's such a difficult chapter, not in terms of translation, but chapter 17 is the end of Malchus Yisrael. The end. And it's going to be an indictment of Klal Yisrael that is so painful. So we'll just have to do it. Malchus Yisrael comes to an end. The 10 tribes nearly, for all intents and purposes, disappear from Jewish history right here in chapter 17. So it's a very painful chapter. I'm so curious. Since today is the yahrzeit of Sarah Eiferman's father, whose name was David Yehuda ben Tuvia HaKohen, so we're going to dedicate the learning to his memory. That's okay. So now you understand why I was curious. So at least it wasn't a question. And I don't mind anybody who wants at any time, if you want a shiur dedicated to somebody's memory, will learn. Somebody's memory will learn refuah shleima for somebody. But this is a rough parak. So I say, we will pick up the thread of Malchus Yehuda, because after this chapter, that's all that's going to be left. There will be nothing left except Malchus Yehuda. Because Yisrael, the 10 tribes, the kingdom of the 10 tribes, comes to an end in this chapter. Listen, we'll go through the chapter and we'll see what kind of feelings what are the feelings that you have. Because I think this is there are certain feelings that I have when I learn the chapter, aside from pain. Let's see. Bishnat Shtemesrei La'achaz Melech Yehud, in the 12th year of Achaz, the king of Yehud, chapter 17, Yud Zayin. Malach Hoshea ben Elah, B'Shomron, Al Yisrael Teisha Shanim. Hoshea ben Elah became king in Shomron over Israel for 9 years. By the way, he has been mentioned earlier. See, what you always have to be able to do over here is pick up the thread. Because I think by this point already in Sefer Malachim, you have to know we deal usually with, say, a king of Yehuda. Meanwhile, we may even tell you what's happening in Yisrael. Then we talk about Yehuda, and then we go back to Yisrael. At the end of chapter 15, let's read over a number of those psukim so that we pick up the thread. In chapter 15, pasuk 27, Chaf Zayin, Bishnat Chamishim Shtayim Shana La'azar Yahu Melech Yehuda, Molach Petar Banrim Ba'yohu Ha'Yisrael Bishomron Esrim Shana. In the 52nd year of Azaryahu, king of Yehuda. Remember, Azaryahu was Uziyahu. He was the one who became a Metzora and for 25 years lived outside. We still have the building in which he lived, right outside the city. Yes, there's a place there, near Yad Avshalom, where was the the place where Uzziah lived. Outside the city, walls.
Just take a field trip. The same building,
Or the place, so I have to do some research too. In the 52nd year of Uzziah, king of Judah, Pekah ben Remaliah became king of Israel and Sharon for 20 years. By Yasar Rabbi Eini Hashem. He did that which was evil in the eyes of God. Lo sermon chatos Yerovim ben Nevat. He didn't turn from the sins of Yerovim ben Nevat Hashem. Echad Yed Yisrael, who caused Israel to sin. Be made Pekach Melech Israel in the days of Pekach, the king of Israel, for Tiglas Pileser Melech Ashur. Tiglas Pileser, the king of Ashur, in other words, the beginning of the end is already in the days of Pekach ben Remaliah. Ashur is the new power in the Middle East. And he took Eon and Avail, Beit Acha, et Yonoach, et Kedesh, et Chatzor, et Hagilad, et Hakalila, Kol Eretz Naphtali, Vayakling, Ashura. This was the first wave of exiles, and he sent them off into exile to Ashur. This Galil and Abraham Yavin. The Apostle 30, Vayikshar Kesher Hosea ben Elah. Hosea ben Elah, now we have to remember what happened earlier. Hosea ben Elah is the one who conspired against Al-Pekar ben Remaliah, Vayakehu, Vayimitehu, Vayimlach Tachta. And he becomes king in his place. And it's now already in the year, the 20th year of Yotam, ben Uzziah. Now we are picking up the thread again of Hosea ben Elah. What you don't know yet, of course, is that Hosea ben Elah is the last of the kings of Israel. And you can't confuse Hosea ben Elah with Hosea ben Be'edi. Hosea ben Be'edi was the Navi Hosea. Same time. And many, many of the psukim in Hosea, and maybe we'll take out a few minutes to look at them, so many of them are directed to Malchus Yisrael. If you want to know the sins of Malchus Yisrael in poetic and prophetic form, then you find it in Hosea. In this chapter of Malachim, we're going to see it in not in its poetic form, but in its prose form. Vayasar Rabbeinu Hashem. Maybe what's even more tragic over here is Hosea ben Elah, the pasuk is going to tell us, was not as bad as the previous kings of Israel. So we would have thought, if he's not as bad as the previous kings, so maybe, you know, things are going to start going better for them. But what happens is precisely the opposite. Why? Chazal explained. From the days of Yerovam ben Nevat, Jews from Israel could not go to Yerushalayim because there were checkpoints on the road. Bo Hosea ben Elah, the Gemara says, Hosea ben Elah bitel pardesos. He removed all the checkpoints. Jews were free to go to Yerushalayim. They didn't.
1995
America. Very good. In other words, one would have imagined, and maybe I'm being a little over dramatic, but you know, that's me, I love that anyway, what's the difference? That all of those times, there may have been Jews in Israel that were saying, or they may have been saying, when will the moment come that we will be able to go to Yerushalayim? We want the Kotel now. And then when they finally get the opportunity, they don't go. That big guy. Your politics. She's Tanakh. Your politics. And I'm drama. All right. So in other words, when it gets better over here, the getting better makes it worse. And we have a similar problem. As long as as Yerushalayim, and we were cut off from Yerushalayim, there was a yearning and a longing, and the heart is basically ganging for Yerushalayim. Once you get it, you have it already. No, I mean, I'm always.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's
time. Yeah, the Kotel girl's not running away. That's not. You're talking about our problems. See, I don't like to talk about our problems. There are some times that I'm ashamed of myself, but I pinch myself and I remind myself that somebody once asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, they decided in Rav, they asked him, it's more than 30 days and I didn't go to the Kotel. Should I tear Kriya? Should I rend my garments when I go to the Kotel? So his fabled response was supposed to be, anybody who lives in Yerushalayim and hasn't been by the Kotel for 30 days, nothing's going to help him. Who's your neighbor, huh? So that's what happens over here. The Gemara says, and more than that, do you know when he removed the checkpoints? We know the date. I forgot all about it. We know the date. Tumba Av. The 15th day of Av. The Gemara at the end of Masechta Tanit says, Lo hayu yomim tovim liyisrael. The last Mishnah in Masechta Tanit says there were no greater yomim tovim by the Jewish people than the 15th of Av and Yom HaKippurim and Yom Kippur. Those were the days on which Bnos Yisrael, the daughters of Israel, would go out and they would dress up in something borrowed, something blue, something old, something new, and they would go out into the streets and they would say, Bachor, Soy Necho, lift your eyes, don't look for beauty, don't look for money, look for a good girl. Gemara says, what were the great Yom Tovim? Why were Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur the great Yom Tov? So in Yom Kippur, Rashi says, because it's Yom Shenitna Torah LeYisrael, it was the day the Torah was given to the Jewish people. What does Rashi mean, Torah was given? God, the Luchot, exactly. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up onto the mountain on Shavuos. But when will he finally come down from the mountain with a set of Luchot that he gives to the Jewish people? 120 days later, it's going to be 3 times 40 days. He's up there for 40 days and 40 nights, and God tells him, go down quickly because your people have made a golden calf. He comes down, he smashes the Luchos, he spends a day down below destroying those who had worshipped the eagle. He goes up to the mountain again and he says, I'm going to pray to God, maybe he will forgive you. And there for 40 days and 40 nights without eating, without drinking, he prays before God. And on Rosh Chodesh Elul, 40 days later, Rosh Chodesh Elul, God tells him, I want you to hew and cut another 2 luchot, and I'm going to write on those luchot the words that were on the previous luchot. He's up there another 40 days and 40 nights, and it's on Yom Kippur that he comes down, and by giving them the luchos, it says, Salachti kedvarecha, God has forgiven the sin of the eagle, therefore Yom Kippur is the day of Mechila Slicha, the Kapar. So that's Yom Kippur, but the Mishnah said that there were 2 great Yom Tovim to Klal Yisrael, Tuba of. And Yom Kippur. Then the Gemara asks, what happened on Tu B'Av? Chances are that I won't remember all of them. Six, if I'm not mistaken, 6 different things happened on Tu B'Av. Let's see. If I only come up with 4, so then I'll say no, the Gemara said 4. But I think it was 6. Kolu Bo Meitei Midbar. Those who were dying in the desert. Next week's Seder. McCartland, all of you are going to die. Anybody from age 20 and further is going to die in the desert. You're not going to come into Eretz Yisrael. In the 40th year, also Rashi describes that every year on Tisha B'Av night, anybody who was over 20 at the time of the Meraglim would dig a grave and go to sleep in the grave. Is this a conspiracy? How many times have I said over the great clay yoker at the beginning of next week's Seder Parshat Shlach that Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake was that he sent Meraglim when he should have sent Meraglot? It's right there. Maybe I will alert with you next week. Not to war they don't go out, but these people were sent as tourists, and boy are they tourists. Every time in Munah Amit or Young Israel, you understand, as a tour, you go running off all over the country, God bless you. In the 40th year in the desert, the 40th year of the desert, whoever was left, dug a grave, went to sleep in the grave, and the following morning, everybody got up. So they were wondering what had happened. They were the last group, the ones who were supposed to die in the desert. So they thought maybe they had made a mistake. The calculation, maybe it wasn't really Tisha B'Av. So they kept sleeping in their graves for the next 6 nights until Tu B'Av, when they saw a full moon. So they knew for sure that the date had passed and they had been spared. I have a lot of Torah on why they were spared. Did I even tell you that? I'm going to tell it to you. Because this is one of those, occasionally, over a career of 40, 50 years, you come up with something good. But I remember this most specifically because it was a balabus in West Hempstead who tried to show off the rabbi. And he comes running in to me with a question, one. After davening question, everybody's listening, he gives the rabbi the words, "Rabbi, there's one yahrzeit that is mentioned in Tanakh, only one." We're talking about a yahrzeit, and you'll see how significant it's going to be. Of all the great of Tanakh, beginning with Adam HaRishon until Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, there is no yahrzeit that appears. The day of death never appears in Torah, Nevi'im, or Ksuvim, except one. The one is, right? By the way, this is the kind of thing that they should ask on a Tanakh test, or as I mentioned in Shul, Ben Shabbos, one of my fellows in Shul, there's some kind of a call-in TV riddle program. I think that they've been asking questions about 1,000 years of Zionism, and the question was, how many words are there in the Balfour Declaration? They know already. So this fellow from Shul called in and he had it correct. He got 50,000 shekel. 150,000 shekel. But wait a minute. He didn't know. He took a guess. What was the guess? Because after they asked the question, sort of it sounded strange to them. They said, "Na lehit kasher. Na lehit kasher." And that's not the words they would normally use. You know, "Tit kashru, take off miyad, tell a meser, achat sheva sheva." No. No, so he decided he's going to take a guess. Nun, Aleph, 51. So he calls up and he says 51. And they think he's a great genius of Zionism. Of Zionist knowledge. So here's a real good question. Who is the only yahrzeit that we have? So I'll tell you who the only yahrzeit is. It's in Parshat Maaseh. So the end of Bamidbar, Parshat Maaseh. Let me read the... At the beginning of Parshat Maaseh, they list the 48 journeys of the Jewish people through the Midbar. It's in chapter 33, Lamed Gimel, in Sefer HaMidbar, Pasuk Lamed Ches. Vayal Aharon HaKohen El Hor HaHor. Aharon HaKohen went up to the Hor HaHor, Al Pi Hashem, according to the command of God, by Yom Hashem, he died there, B'shnas Harboim, Litzeitz B'nei Yisrael, Mi'aretz Mitzrayim, the 40th year the Jews went out of Egypt, B'chodesh HaChamishi Be'echod LaChodesh. The fifth month, first day, Rosh Chodesh Av. This is the only yahrzeit in all of Tanakh. Even though everybody knows the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu Zayin Adar, but it doesn't say it any place. Do you know how we know it? Because at the beginning of Sefer Yahushua it says that when the 30 days of mourning for Moshe were over, God tells Yahushua, "Prepare yourself, 3 days, we're crossing into Eretz Yisrael." And then it says that they crossed into Eretz Yisrael on the 10th day of Nisan. So all you have to do is go 33 days back, and you know that it was Zayin Adar. But it doesn't say any place that Moshe Rabbeinu died on Zayin Adar. This is the only yard site. So here this Balabas comes into shul in the morning. Rabbi, why is Arna Cohen's the only yard site that's mentioned in all of Tanakh? I mean, of course, I got it out of him. How did he know? This is a fellow who used to get the Jerusalem Post every morning, and it was a riddle in the Jerusalem Post. Some little riddle from the Jerusalem Post. I didn't really suspect him that he knew Tanakh that well. All right. The only thing is, the Rabbeinu Shem is very, at the times that the Rabbeinu Shem was very good to rabbis. Because this is a difficult question. Why is this the only yard site that is mentioned in all of Tanakh? And the answer came to me in such a flash, I felt that it was coming down directly from God. Pure God, not pure gold. I said, simple. The poor guy, I think he's still lying flat out in West Hempstead in the Beis Medrash over there. He was ready to faint. Simple, I said. The Gemara at the end of Tanya says that those who were supposed to die in the last year didn't die. They slept in their graves from Tisha B'Av until the 15th of Av. The 15th of Av they saw the new moon, so they knew that they hadn't made a mistake, and they knew they were spared. Why were they spared? So I said, you know why they were spared? Because on Rosh Chodesh Av, Aaron died. And by Aaron, distinct from Moshe, by Aaron it says, Vayivku also kol beis Yisrael. All of Israel mourned the death of Aaron. By Moshe, it doesn't say that. In order to differentiate and tell us that since Aaron was the Ohev Shalom and the Rodev Shalom, everybody liked him. Everybody loved him. Vayivku also kol beis Yisrael. All of Israel mourned for Aaron. And Misas Tzadikim Mechaperes, the Gemara says. The death of the righteous is a source of atonement. And therefore the last group that was supposed to die on that last Tisha B'Av, after the Shiva of Aaron HaKohen, didn't die because they had mourned Aaron. The source of Aaron is that which saved them. And I think that it's Emes La'amito, there's no doubt about it, that it's true. And therefore, in order to explain ultimately what the Gemara is going to tell us, that they didn't die, that's why the Pasuk tells us his yard site. So that we should know that it was different. And that's why the Pasuk says, by Aaron, by Yifku also, kol beis Yisrael, that's going to be in Parshat Chukat. What was that? Vayivku es Aaron shloshin yom. Wait a minute, this is even better. Vayivku es Aaron shloshin yom kol beis Yisrael. It means it's in the middle of the bechir. Clients are crying for him. People who are crying for the death of a tzaddik. That's going to be their salvation. By Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of Torah, it says, Vayivku b'nei Yisrael as Moshe Ba'arvot Moav Shloshim Yom. It does not say Kol Beit Yisrael. By Aaron it says Kol Beit Yisrael, in order to tell us that's why they were saved. But anyway, that happened on the 15th of Av. So on the 15th of Av they knew, and listen to what I'm going to say, they knew on the 15th of Av that the Gzeira, the decree of Jews who were to die in the desert, the decree was lifted, rescinded, over, had come to an end. Gemara goes on to say, Tu B'Av, on the 15th of Av, Hudru Shvatim Lavo Zeh B'Zeh. The tribes were permitted to marry one another. Because as a result of the daughters of Tzlafchad, who came with the question, why don't we have a share in the land? So what was decided was that there will not be intermarriage, intertribal marriage, because if there will be intertribal marriage before the land is divided, then it's possible that pieces of land that belong to one tribe are going to go to another tribe. But then what was the first, second generation of those who come into Eretz Yisrael? So all should marry within their tribes, so that whatever portion of land is given to them goes to that tribe. That's why the daughters of Tzlafchad married their cousins or uncles, so that they married from the tribe of Menashe. And everybody therefore received, each tribe received its share in Eretz Yisrael. Once all of Eretz Yisrael was divided, then there's no problem anymore. Then people can marry, intermarriage from one tribe to the next.
Is it the last week then?
Yeah, then they were able to do anything. Because once it's in the family, remember, it will always go back to the family in Yovel, even if it's sold. So my head isn't working well, so how many did I tell you? I told you three.
Three.
I told you three. Sarah? So by the way, we were talking about the petira of a Kohen. And this shir is dedicated to the petira of a Kohen. Haruge beitar nit, very good. Haruge beitar nit dulkura. After the terrible battle, the last battle of the Bar Kokhba rebellion was at the city of Beitar. That's where Bar Kokhba was crushed by the legions of Rome. Over 500,000 Jews were killed in battle, and Rome prohibited Jews from burying their dead. And the Gemara describes how the blood flowed all the way off to the Mediterranean. It was a terrible, terrible tragedy. And Jews were waiting for the day that they would be able to bury their dead. And Hadrian was then one of the cruelest of the Roman Caesars, was Hadrian. And then Hadrian passed from the scene, new Caesar, and he gave permission for those killed at Beitar to be buried. With this tour. Hosea ben Elah. Hosea. So we have four. All right, listen, if I had, the head doesn't have to work that well. The important thing is the following. By the way, the fourth bracha in benching was composed in order to commemorate Haruge Beitar, and it was composed after permission was given for them to be buried. This was a tremendous simcha for Klal Yisrael. 600,000 Jews alive, dead, alive, never brought to burial. So the bracha of Atov V'Hameitiv. There is a common denominator to all the things that happened on Tu B'Av. Go ahead. Binyamin. Sarah, you're getting better and better. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, there's the terrible, terrible tragedy of Pilegesh B'Giva. Pilegesh B'Giva was the horrible story of really a gang rape of a woman by the people of Giva. And all of Klal Yisrael came up to wage war against Binyamin. There were three battles, and Amalek, tens of thousands died on each side, until finally Klal Yisrael crushed Binyamin, and an entire tribe. Binyamin, by the way, was one of the bigger tribes. Binyamin had 10 sons. They were left with 400 people, 400 males. And then all of a sudden, Klal Yisrael, it hit them that a tribe is going to be destroyed, wiped out, exterminated. But they had taken an oath saying that they will not give their daughters to Binyamin. So that's when the Shiloh Sadie Hawkins Day, they said that those who would come to Shiloh, they told the 400 from Binyamin to grab women from certain cities that had not taken part in the oath. I mean, the whole story, I'm not going to go into the whole story, it's a tragic chapter in Jewish history. The 400 married, and in other words, the decision was taken that they can marry, and once Binyamin can marry into Klal Yisrael, it meant that a whole tribe was saved from extinction. It was not that it didn't reach the point of the last of the Binyaminites. The common denominator of all of the things that happened on Tu B'Av is one idea. And this one idea has really been at the very heart of Jewish survival throughout all of history. And the Gemara, in a different context, uses this term, Gezeira Avidi Debatli. A Gezeira, an evil decree, the end is it will be removed. Now, what it means is extremely difficult times are going to pass. They're going to pass. Now, those people, those nations, that didn't have the patience and despaired during the periods of adversity disappeared from the scene of history. But if you always have this hope that a terrible time is going to pass, then you survive it. Each one of these things that happened on Tu B'Av was the end of a gzeira. There was a decree, a terrible decree, terrible things were happening, but it ended. The Harugei Beit Har were not going to remain unburied for all of time. There was all Jews had hope. Tomorrow, next month, next year, we're going to bury them. The idea that maybe not everybody is going to die in the desert and the gzeira is going to be over. Jews wanted to go to Yerushalayim for years, but they couldn't. Along comes Hoshea ben Ela, and he removes the checkpoints. The gezeira is over. The idea that an evil decree ends and passes from the world is a fundamental part of a Jewish survival mechanism. Because if you think and you feel that as horrible and as terrible as it is today, it's always going to be like this, and it's never going to change, you can't survive that. That's already a prescription for self-destruction. Tu B'Av, that was the great yontif of Tu B'Av. By the way, that relates it to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is the day on which you can be mevatel at gzeirah ha. K'nar roa gzar dineinu. On Yom Kippur, we make it part of Torah, the idea that a gzeirah can be removed. But over here, unfortunately, precisely the removal of the gzeira, so you were tested. Isn't this always the test that Klal Yisrael has? And as you say, I agree 100%. The great test of the Jewish people today is how do you relate to Eretz Yisrael? I finally gave it to you. Now what are you going to do with it? Like in the time of Ezra. This is going to be part of the. This is going to be the theme of next week's Chumash year and the week after, most probably. The idea we are being tested, and here was the great test. So, when did Hoshea ben Ela do it? It's just fascinating that all of these happened on the 15th of Av. All right. Where did you plan on talking on this today? This is just my God. Vayasa Rabbi and Hashem, Rak Lokum, we only did one pasuk in chapter 17. One pasuk. I had only shown you the. In other words, you have to pick up the thread from the end of 15. So you have to know that Hoshea ben Ela came to power as a result of a conspiracy and an assassination. Which in and of itself is all tragic, you understand. I mean, we know the tragedy of assassination. I get the feeling when I read it over here, I don't know how should we relate to them. I'm sure that, you know how I really think we have to relate? We sort of read the psukim. He conspired, and he killed him, and he ruled like, you know, the king is assassinated, long live the king. I don't think that's the way it worked. There must have been many, many people who were deeply and profoundly wounded by the assassination of a king. I don't think assassination becomes another one of those, another assassination. There's an assassination. I mean, this cut into the very heart of Klal Yisrael. Vayasa Rabbeinu Hashem, Rak Lokum Malchi Yisrael. Not as dead as Malchi Yisrael, Asher Hoyu Lefanav, who preceded him. And in what respect? It was only in this one respect that he opened the way. And Chazal say it. Let me tell you how Chazal say it. Chazal say the following. Seder El Yomu Zuta. V'chimam Eshtana Hoshea Ben Ela. Mikol Malchi Yisrael, Shehoyu Lefanav, Shenilkita Haaretz, V'galo Aseret Shvatim V'yamav. The Medrash asks, in what respect was Hoshea ben Ela different than all of the kings of Israel who preceded him, that in his days, the 10 tribes went into exile, and the land was conquered, captured. Ella, says the Medrash, we should amar yirom ben avod v'ad shibor sheh ben Ella hoysa aveiro kshuda biyachid. From the time that Yerovim ben Nevat arose until Hosea ben Ela, the sin of Klal Yisrael was really related to an individual. One individual was blamed for it all, and that was Yerovim ben Nevat. It was his sin. He's the one who closed the roads to Yerushalayim. V'koshel lifnei ov harachamim, and it was very difficult before the God of the Father of Mercy, lahaglot zibur ba'avon yachid, to send a people off into exile, a community, Klal Yisrael, because of the sin of an individual. When Hoshea ben Ela came, Amad ubitel kol hamishmarot kulan, he removed all of the checkpoints, all of the guard posts. Vayomachnis va'omer, Hoshea ben Ela announced publicly, and he said, kol mishu rotze lalot l'Yerushalayim yavo v'yaleh. Whoever wants to go up to Yerushalayim can go up. By the way, the words that the Chazal are putting in the mouth of Hoshea ben Ela are nearly the same words that Koresh, king of Paras, is going to say some 200 years later. Anybody, Mikol Amo, that wants to go up to Yerushalayim, Hashem, be Yehuda, go ahead. Kol mi shehu rotze la'alot liYerushalayim yavo v'yale. Is that a play on yale v'yavo? you knew already. I started the sentence and I see the look. Yavo v'yale. The shomat kolar mitzavaro utzla'o b'tzavor harabim. You know what it means? That he removed the yoke from his neck, and he now placed the yoke on the necks of others. In other words, I'm not going to be blamed or responsible for it. Now it's your responsibility. You want to go? The roads are open. Free. Go!
The irony is that they didn't go to Jerusalem, they went there.
That's a little more than irony. I think we need to use it. That if they didn't go south. They didn't go south, but they went north. They didn't go where they're supposed to go. So they went where they didn't want to go. All right. Olav, Pasuk Gimel. Olav Shalmaneser, Melech Asher, Shalmaneser, the king of Asher, came up against him. And here the Mepharshim always say, when it says Olav, he came up against him. So there are always two possibilities. One possibility, of course, is the fact that going to Eretz Yisrael is always called Olav, because it's Gavara, it's higher than all of the lands. And also it seems that throughout Tanakh, going to war, you are Olel Milchama. In other words, in a sense, because it requires a sense of lifting and raising one's courage in order to go out to war. So Shalmaneser, king of Ashur, went out against him by Yilo Hoshea Eved, by Yoshev Lo Mincha. Hoshea was a servant to him, and he gave him Mincha, a gift. He paid tribute. He paid tribute to him. Hoshea is going to make a tragic mistake. He's also going to make a mistake. His mistake is that he's going to conspire against the king of Asher. In other words, he's going to try and cast off the yoke of Asher. And there are times at which you have to know to bend your head before the enemy and bide your time. And the Nevi'im condemned him for it. Hoshea says, Ephraim ro'er ruach. I'm reading a passage from Hoshea. Ephraim goes after the wind. What's that remind you of? Don Quixote, Don Quixote? He's running after the wind. Rodef kadim. He pursues the east. The east wind, Kolayon, Kozom, Vashod Yarbeh. All day what he's involved in is in lies and stealing. Ubritim Ashur Yukrotu, he makes a covenant, a treaty with Ashur, and at the same time, Shemen Lemitzrayim Yuval, he sends oil to Egypt. What the Navi is saying in his prophetic terminology, on the one hand,
you make a treaty with Ashur, and on the other hand, you are sending all sorts of raw materials to Mitzrayim, so that Mitzrayim should join you against Ashur. Isn't it Yirmiyahu at the very beginning of Yirmiyahu? Chapter 2. One of the great... Mary Star, I understand it. Yirmiyahu says, Gam b'nei Nof v'sach panches yiruch kodkod. Even the people of Nof. I'm reading in Yirmiyahu chapter 2, Pasuk 16, Tet Zion. Gam b'nei Nof v'tach panches yiruch kodkod. The people of Nof and Tach Panches are going to crush your skull. Nof and Tach Panches were the names of two major cities in Egypt. And listen to what Yirmiyahu continues by saying, Halo zot kaselach ozveich et Hashem lotayev. This is happening to you. This will happen to you because you forsook God, your God, be'et molichech badorech, as he's taking you, he's leading you on the road. God is your leader. Va'ata. Malach l'derech Mitzrayim, what are you doing on the road to Egypt, l'shtot mei shichor, to drink from the waters of the Nile? U'malach l'derech Ashur, l'shtot mei nahar. And what are you going to Ashur in order to drink from the waters of the river? What Yisrael was doing, moving in both directions, they were either a treaty with one, and with the other they were making a treaty to break the treaty with the other. Yirmiyahu is saying this to Yehuda. This is after the days of Hoshea ben Ela. But the same thing that started in the days of Hoshea ben Ela, the same mistakes are going to be made later on by Yehuda. And all the treaties basically represented a lack of trust, bitachon, in the Levi Yisrael. And Ephraim... wait a minute. Yeah, but he didn't make treaties from a position of weakness, from strength. So from strength, what he was really doing was, this was intelligent diplomacy. By the way, the pasuk that I quoted from Hoshea before was, Hoshea ben Be'evi, the Navi, was telling Hoshea ben Ela, the king, Lelo, you are now a servant to Ashur. Remain a servant to Ashur. You're not going to have the power to destroy Ashur. Fact is, the Nevi'im, I will be able to show you many Pesukim where the Nevi'im ordained positions about the events of the day. For example, we're going to come to Yoshio, king of Yehuda. Big tzaddik! Mitzrayim is traveling through Eretz Yisrael in order to go to war with Ashur. It's going to be those are the two powers for the next 150 years. Mitzrayim and Ashur are going to be the two powers. And they're going to be struggling. And of course, who's caught sandwiched in the middle? Eretz Yisrael is in the middle. So Paro Necho is on his way through Eretz Yisrael to go wage war with Ashur. The Navi told Yoshiyahu, don't start up with Mitzrayim. Let them go. Told him clearly. And Yoshiyahu refused to listen. And Yoshiyahu did it for extreme right-wing nationalist reasons. He did not want any foreigner setting foot in Eretz Yisrael. So he went to war with Paro, Mitzrayim, at Megiddo. And he was killed in the Battle of Megiddo. They say that they made his body, arrows went through his body, and he looked like a sieve. That's Yoshio, great tzaddik. We're going to see about Yoshio, great tzaddik. By the way, the Nevi'im knew divinely, but more than that, they were also, it turns out that they were simply very intelligent, except that I believe, of course, that we believe, that they knew it, because it was Dvar Hashem. There were times at which you had to maintain a treaty. Not because a treaty is holy, It's because of the Meishav knows that you're not going to be able to survive in here. Just take a look at what happens to Hoshea ben Ela. He's going to bring about the destruction of all of Malchus Yisrael. Vayimtza melech Asher b'Hoshea Kesher. Asher sholach malachim el sol melech Mitzrayim. How did he find out? He found out that there was a conspiracy between Hoshea, who had sent messengers to Saul, the king of Mitzrayim, and Velohelon Minchol Melech Ashur, Kishon of Shana, after he had sent his messengers to Saul Melech Mitzrayim, so obviously they had made some kind of an agreement, so therefore he felt now it's a united front against Ashur, so he doesn't have to send him any more tribute as he did year by year. He didn't realize that the king of Ashur had agents all over. I mean, this was simply intelligence reports. He knew what was going on. Vayatzveyu melech Ashur, the king of Ashur, arrested him. Vayatzveyu beit kela, and he put him tied up. He put him into jail. Vayal melech Ashur b'chol haaretz, then the king of Ashur came against the whole land. Vayal Shomron, he came up against Shomron. And you should know, even in the perek that is going to describe the disintegration and the disappearance of Malchus Yisrael, you have to look for the rays of light. The mighty power of Ashur comes up against Shomron. Vayatzar aleha shalosh shanim. He besieged the city for 3 years. You know why he had to besiege the city for 3 years? For two reasons. It was a well-fortified city, and Jews were going to fight to the bitter end. That's all they were going to... And this is lichvodam sheyischar. Bishnat ha-tshiyas lo-Hoshea, the ninth year of Hoshea, lochav melech Ashur and Shomron. This is the last year of Hoshea ben Ela, king of Ashur. He captures Shomron. Vayogel et Yisrael Ashura. Vayegel. He exiled Yisrael to Ashur. Vayoshev otam. And he settled them in places called Bachlach and Chavor, Nahar Gozan, Vare Madai. And here, of course, scholars go into all sorts of descriptions as to where these places are. They're in Mesopotamia, even as far as Armenia, Turkish-Iraqi border, the Syrian-Turkish border, the other side of the Euphrates. From here until the end of the chapter are going to be the reasons why they were exiled. It's going to be a litany, a listing of the sins of Israel. Now, I have a certain feeling about it. I don't know, you'll tell me what your feeling is. Vayihi kichotu Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, came to pass when the children of Israel sinned before God, their God. Hamalo tam yeretz Mitzrayim, the one brought them up out of the land of Egypt. Mitachat yad paro melech Mitzrayim, from beneath the hand of Paro, the king of Egypt. Vayiru Elohim acheidim, they feared other gods. God had warned them all along not to fear other gods. And the meaning of Elohim acheidim, Rashi in Chumash says, why are they called other gods? See, because other gods, you know, can leave, if you ever stop to think about it, it can leave a very wrong impression. There's this God, and there are other gods. Right? So Rashi in Chumash says, Elohim she'acheidim la'ovdeim. Gods that are others, strangers to those who serve them, because they're incapable of doing anything for the ones who serve them. So it's not other gods, so-called gods that are others to the ones who serve them. Vayelchu b'chukas ha-goyim, they went in the according to the conduct of the nations, asher horish Hashem b'nei bnei Yisrael, that God had cast out from before the children of Israel, u'malchei Yisrael asher osu, they went not only according to the chukos hagoyim, they also went according to the chukos, the laws of the kings of Israel. I'll tell you what it means. And this is again not a political comment. the halacha is clear. Melech who commands a person to do an aveira, then you know what a person is supposed to do. I'll use the ugly words that rabbis in Israel use. L'sarev pekuda. You're supposed to refuse to fulfill an order given by a king if the order negates Torah law.
Drop it!
And therefore, if Jews follow the laws of the king when they should not have, then they are held guilty.
That's all.
So the Pasuk is saying they went in two chukos. They followed the chukos HaGoyim whom God had cast out from before them, and they went in the chukos that the kings of Israel had made. I have a feeling that the indictment over here is that in all of the years of Malchei Yisrael, we didn't hear of one great Hafganah against the checkpoints. 100,000 Jews should have come out with I don't know, instead of, we want you to show him now. There was an acquiescence. There was a going along with it. It may very well have been out of fear, but there wasn't a concentrated effort to battle against what was happening. And the fact is that there were, I mean, if I want to be a place of chuchim after it's all over, there had to be periods of unrest between one king and the next, especially a few kings are assassinated. There are periods of unrest, there's periods of anarchy. There could have been moments at which people could have taken the law, so to speak, into their own hands, and they didn't. And for this, they're held guilty. Vayichapu b'nei Yisrael dvarim asher lo kein. The children of Israel, vayichapu means, I don't know what good word they use in English, but sort of they made up.
Impute.
To impute, that's it. They sort of accuse God of things asher lo kein, that are not so. Not so. They built high places in all of their cities. Migdal Notzrim ad Ir Mivtzar. Migdal Notzrim means what do they call it in English there?
The Tower of the Watch.
The Tower of the Watch. By the way, that's one shot. No, a Notzer is a god or a watchman, you know, a little poof. That represents a small building. It can also mean the one who watches a field, and the word notzer comes from shoot. The shoot of a flower. In the perek, the famous perek of Mashiach, in Yeshayahu chapter 11, V'yotza choter migeza Yishai. The Netzer Misharashov Yifre Yotza Choter, a branch is going to come out from the family of Yishai, the Netzer, and a shoot Misharashov from his roots Yifre. So Migdal Notzim was a person who was out in the field planting the Notzer from plant or shoot. Had a little place where he was able to find some kind of shade. Ad Ir Mivtzar, a fortified city, in other words, we're talking from the smallest until the largest. They made high places. Vayatzivu lahem matzevot va'asherim, and they made unto themselves matzevot are the altars upon which they brought sacrifices, and they made the Asherah tree. They planted Asherah tree, Al-Kol Giv Arkav Ohar Taha Koleitz Vanam, on every high hill and under every fresh tree. By Katu Shom V'chol Bamot, and they brought sacrifices or incense on all of these high places. Kavgoyim Asher Hedlo Hashem Mikneim, just as were done by the nations whom God had exiled from before them. By Yasu Dvorim Royim La'achizat Hashem, they did bad things to anger God. You know, this part of the pasuk is a little strange to me. after all that they've listed till now, you understand? You say about somebody, he's a Ritzeach, and he's a Ganef, and he's a Shakran, and he's a bad boy. Bad boy. Right? There's something, there's a lack of balance over here. And I think we have to look for this lack of balance. Now, because the question that should be going through your minds, of course, is, what's the problem? It's too cold? That's what it always is. So every time I get into the car with my wife, I said, I'm putting on the air conditioner, she's turning it off. On, off. During the winter, I put on the heat, she turns off the heat. They tell me that in every couple, there's one likes it one way, and one likes it the other, and they fight forever. Huh? No, so I try to get it down to number one, and okay, that's the way it is.
We're talking about your car, I'm talking about this one.
Oh, about this one? Nah, the shear is going to be over, let's see. The question that should be going through your mind, I mean, maybe I shouldn't even put questions in your mind, but the question that should be going through your mind is that I have had a consistent shita throughout the study of Tanakh, beginning with Yehoshua. That just a few. Now, in this chapter, it's most probably going to be the greatest and widest ranging indictment of an entire people. I mean, no less than every high hill and under every fresh tree. Now, do you really think that that's what was going on? Let me ask you. Tell me. Come on, give me. What do you think? I won't hold you to it. We're not going to. You really think that Tachas Kol Eitz Ranan, every fresh tree, by the way, fresh tree doesn't have to mean only fruit-bearing tree. Any green tree, you can be sure there was a Getzke under the green tree. And if it was a high hill, what are you talking about? Dotted, punctuated, thousands. You really think that that's a... I don't think it's a description. A description of the reality. Don't answer. You know, don't take any chances. Don't answer yet. Let's wait till the end of the chapter to see what you're going to say. I tell you what's going through my mind. And there are a few chapters in Tanakh that give me this feeling, and this is one of them. It's like a Rabbeinu Shel Olam or a father who does something very bad to a child, and he's trying to justify it to himself. Why did I really do this?
You always do what I don't want.
Yeah, you never listen to me. Your room is always dirty. You never get up to me. What are you talking about? I've been meaning for the last 10 years, I missed twice. What do you think missing twice is? I mean, what's that from it? Now, I don't want to leave the impression that, you know, this is a child's play. No, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is, yes, he's justifying, or the Nevi'im are justifying what God did. What they're trying to tell you is, from God's point of view, how does he see it? How does he see, or how does he imagine, the conduct of Klal Yisrael should be at a time when there is revealed divine presence in Eretz Yisrael? Do you know what these people experienced? In the sixth year, enough grew for 3 years. I mean, do I have to go through all the things that these people are experiencing? During the time of Bayit Rishon, the bracha, that in the sixth year, enough is going to grow for 3 years. There will be some gluyim. I don't even have to take the unusual of all of Israel gathered on Mount Carmel, and fire comes down from heaven, and a million Jews prostrate themselves and say, Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem hu Elokim. You think that was the only time that they saw divine intervention, divine presence? I mean, when they're good, there's rain. And when they're not good, there's no rain. there's a famine and there's a rain, no rain during the time of Elio. There's no rain for a few years during the time of Elisha. We're talking about so much was happening all the time, so that the Rebbeim had a right to expect a greater and more exalted kind of conduct. And if Klal Yisrael doesn't live up to it, then the description here is of a Klal Yisrael that doesn't live up to God's expectations. Yes?
The feeling I get is the same idea that you always use, that it was only a small proportion of people who were doing these things, but the big problem, I think, was the apathy of the rest of them.
All right, agreed. I'm going to go along with that. The apathy of the rest, that was the problem by the Egel, that was the problem, as I said, with regard to the checkposts, not to let them go to Yerushalayim. There should have been a greater outcry. There should have been pain felt by the rest of Klal Yisrael. Yes, Reva.
I think in the Chumash a few times, Hashem is angry at Moshe because he spoke against the Jewish people. So why would Hashem think things that were exaggerated here? Against the Jewish people.
You say it's a good question? All right. For a moment, I wasn't sure. Yeah, it's. We'd have the same question with regard to the Nevi'im. Yeshayahu. In chapter 6 of Yeshayahu, when God appears to him from him the first time, so he God asks, who will I send to the Jewish people? Yeshayahu volunteers, here I am, I'm ready to go. And then he makes the comment, B'toch am t'mei svatayim anochi yoshev, I'm living amongst the people whose lips are unclean. And it says, Vayoach alai, a malach came flying over to me and put a burning coal to my mouth. And then God said to me, now your sin is removed. And Chazal explained, do you know why the malach, you know what the malach is doing? Washing his mouth out with soap. That's what he's doing. Kashering his mouth. You don't talk like that about Klal Yisrael. So what you're asking for is how we should define the balance between reality or Moshe. Moshe says, Hein lo yaminu li, the snake says, Jews are not going to believe me. They're going to say, God never appeared to you. The Rebbeim tells him, put your hand in your coat. He takes out his hand and his hand is tzarat. Why is his hand tzarat? God tells him, this is where you talk about my people. When Jews lose the battle of Ai, and chapter 7 of Yahushua, and Yahushua tears his garments, prostrates himself before God, cries out, we should never have crossed into Eretz Yisrael, I don't know what we came for, now we're going to be attacked from all sides. So God tells him, listen, Israel sinned. That pasuk you should know, we've learned that pasuk often, because that is the pasuk where God condemns all of Israel for the sin of one man, Chota Yisrael, Vekam Gov, Vekam Kitashu, Samu Vechleim, etc. So Yehoshua, according to the Gemara, Yehoshua asks God, who sinned? And God turns to him with indignation and he says, V'chi dilatur anochi? Am I a Lashon Havanik? I'm going to tell you who... You want me to tell you who sinned? You know what you're going to have to do? Tomorrow, you're going to have family after family walk by the Aron, and the Aron is going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. V'chi dilatur anochi? Or the famous Yerushalmi at the beginning of the Sechta Peah, where the Yerushalmi says, in the days of David, Jews would go down to battle and they would fall in battle. In the days of Achav, do you hear the two periods that are being compared to one another? David and Achav. In the days of David, they went down to war and men fell in war. And in the days of Achav, Russia, par excellence, there must be a faket the word than par excellence. I mean, par worselance, the worst Russia of them all. And what happens? In the days of Achav, Jews go down to war. You know, all of a sudden, I have to look up the Gemara again. I'm sure those are the words of the Gemara. To go down to war, and in the Navi, the words are always to go up to war. Oh, I'm going to have to come and look that up. Oh, that's very good. Excellent. You know, it fits better with English, you know, the men who go down to the sea in ships, isn't that the way into the valley of death? Just plain into the valley of death went the 600. But the Gemara says, why did they fall in the days of David? Do you know why they fell in the days of David? Mipnei shehoyu bahem dilaturin. Because that's a Greek word. I imagine dilatoriously they spoke evil. In the days of David, they spoke evil. They were misapri lashon hara. How many were there? So the Gemara says there was Dor Gadomim, one lashon haranik, one lashon haranik. And in the days of Achav, they didn't talk lashon hara. I think there has to be a certain spiritual way in which we look at Tanakh. If we're going to take this, you know, let's go through another few. Oh, we don't have much time. Combination, accumulation, God's expectations. But the point I want to make is that we're just going to have to find the clues in the Perek that leave us with the impression that it was not as black as it looks. And of course, you know when you see it, when you come to certain exaggerations, you know that it can't be literal. That's why I quoted a number of times, on every high hill and under every fresh tree. The purpose of an exaggeration is twofold. Number one, to tell you how terrible the sin was, and at the very same time, you know what it's saying? The sin wasn't as terrible as it sounds. It couldn't have been. It simply couldn't have been. Unless each one has meaning. One is telling you the reality, and the other is telling you how God sees it. Do you know how God sees it? God sees it as though, if in His Eretz Yisrael, His holy Eretz Yisrael, where the Shekhinah exists, there's Avodah Zarah in a few places. That's bad news. Yes?
Why do we have all these problems? God requested their prophecy, and they are the critics of society. Why do they emerge?
That's going to be the next few psukim. In other words, you're raising the question, because the next few psukim are going to talk about the fact that God has sent all sorts of prophets to. So what was the purpose of prophecy? So of course there we're going to have to say that yes, indeed, nevuah shenechtav olad. Nevuah shenitzrach aledorot, prophecy that was necessary for all time, was written. But now I have to tell you something more. But I'm only going to tell you the broad outline. I can't.
Unless the prophecy is for the
distant future. That's what I'm saying now. But that's still not it. In other words, there are two ways to look at Yirmiyahu. And there are times that I felt Yirmiyahu-like. Yirmiyahu was an abject, abysmal failure. Right? No, he failed. Good question. I don't think any of the Nevi'im were failures. So how are we supposed to look at that? Successes. Because in the longer view of things, do you understand, there are psukim in Yirmiyahu that we can testify that man had such awesome and frightening vision. We thank God live in the period of time. I'll take you through 200 psukim in Yirmiyahu. Yeah, the Shofar, hundreds of psukim in Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu, Yecheskel. You know what it means? Patience. Never despair. If the Nevuah was written, if it became part of Kislev HaKodesh, it means Yirmiyahu was not a failure. Ah, to the view of the human eye, he was a failure. Do you know what his failure turned out to be? Not that he wanted it that way. He would have chosen for people to say, Yirmiyahu, you didn't know a word you were talking about. He would have wanted that, yes, they would do tshuva, and the Beis HaMikdash wouldn't be destroyed, and the Jewish Commonwealth would continue, and there most probably would be all sorts of editorials in the newspaper. The Jeremiahs of Jeremiah, the doomseers, the soothsayers, he was all wrong. Yirmiyahu would have wanted that more than anything else. But in the final analysis, they understand the impact that Yirmiyahu had in the world. In the years following his death, every word of Yirmiyahu was studied by diplomats, politicians, kings. They were frightened of the words of Yirmiyahu. I'll explain that to Yitzhak Hashem next week. But more than that, we are now in the position of taking a look at all of the Nevi'im. Every one of them. In the long view of history and Jewish history, we always have all the time in the world. I always say that. We're an eternal people, so we have all the time in the world. So all the words of the Nevi'im. But alright, it's not enough. The chapter will require more thought. I would suggest that you go through it. Yes? Will you please remember to ask that question next week?
I have a question.
Please remember to ask me that question.